Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
Hey y'all, Bayou Bendis here. You've heard us talk about DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, and how payday can come every day by entering their contest with huge cash prizes up for grabs. This week is jam-packed with action ranging from basketball to golf and, of course, hockey. And DraftKings has plenty of ways for you to have a front row seat in all of the action. Making a line on DraftKings adds excitement to every night and is simple to do. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every moment means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Each player has a salary associated with drafting them. Assemble a lineup of players while staying under the salary cap, and then sit back and watch your points pile up. DraftKings has paid over $7 billion to users across the sports. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports, so there is no better place to get in on all of the action. Now that you know how to play, download the DraftKings app and sign up using the code THPN. New users will get a free entry with the first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Like, I like Pinto, and I remember everyone, like, and this is the thing that I think Sens fans need to start realizing. We need to stop looking at the draft. We really need to stop looking at a player being like, he was drafted way too early. You know who you can make an argument who was drafted way too late? Mark Stone. Sixth round pick, and now he's making $9.5 million. Pageau, drafted, I think, in the fifth round and making $5 million. Hoffman.
Welcome to the Sens Hour podcast, your number one source for Sens content, part of the Hockey Podcast Network, hosted by Shane from Ottawa and
Derek from Muskoka, almost near Leaf Country out here.
But I think Clevin was right up there because they traded up to get him with the Leafs. And again, they passed up some talented players for a guy like Clevin. But now Clevin's all of a sudden looking like a talented player himself. Like that goal that he scored in the third game in UND was outrageous. It was just not something you're expecting from the Twitter scouts, especially.
Sens Hour Podcast, your number one stop for all your Senators content. New episodes coming at you every Monday and Thursday, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Have a good one. Stay safe.
Take care.
Hello, you're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Mason Dixon, and this is Habs Nightly, your hub for Habs content. as always, we're back. Myself and Corey to talk about a rather eventful day in the fucking Habs world. Holy shit. What a day for me to go off the grid. I fucking come back at, 9:30 at night, and everything about this team has changed. We're recording this one a little late because I fucking forgot it was Wednesday. But, wow, what a day it's been. This will be out tomorrow, Thursday. So yesterday, for those listening, but holy shit, the whole Habs landscape has changed in an instant.
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably our most important episode to date, because this one is really a chance for the Habs community to see the defining moment of what our future is going to look like, because we have the players, we have the pieces in motion. We just need to make the right decision on the coaches to put this team back on track.
Well, I think this is what we've been asking for, right?
100%.
So if this is the kick in the ass we've been asking Bergevin for. And I want to start this off because we're going to say some negative things about a guy who I genuinely think – well, two guys who I genuinely think gave their all for this organization. So I want to start by saying some positive things about them. What Claude Julien has done for this team the last – how many years has it been? Three or four? Three, right?
Yes.
Has been phenomenal. He has turned this team – I think he's gotten the best out of this team for a few years now. He's made us make the playoffs when I didn't think we should have. He has – you know, he lit a spark under the team, pushed us to the playoffs his first year here. His battle with his heart condition during COVID was phenomenal. And to fight back after that and to come back this year was just amazing. And on the flip side, Kirk Muller, I think, is a guy you can't question. He's doing his best. He was a Canadiens player for how long? Our last captain to win the cup. Just an all around.
For like 3.5 years.
Yeah, just a great organizational cornerstone of this. Like, not a guy you think of when you think of Montreal, but he's given everything as a player and as a coach. Unfortunately, it didn't work out.
He was second overall, too. So, like,
was he second overall?
Mm-hmm. That's just, jersey. 85.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of positive things to say about these two. And before we start, you know, kind of shitting on them a little bit, I just wanted to get that out of the way. But I don't think this was unexpected by anyone. Mark Bergevin said, even again, a little bit of the press conference I saw, I didn't get to watch the whole thing. It's 42 minutes and half of it's in French. So I didn't really have time to kind of sift through it. He said that this has kind of been the plan for a while. The Sens game was not the nail in the coffin, but you know, it kind of feels like that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, like, what do you think was the determining factor? Obviously, this has been in the – like, we have expected this personally. I think Habs fans as a whole have. I don't think anyone was really shocked by it. What do you think, though, like, personally, was the main factor in this firing? Because I do think Julien is still a – we talked last episode, he's kind of outdated, but he's still a capable coach. And he has shown a willingness to change.
I mean, truthfully, I don't think if we didn't show up well and play well against Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, I don't think he was going to make it this season. Like, I think we would have had a coach's change in the offseason. I don't believe that Julien would have been around. I just think that just despite of our, you know, relatively good run in the bubble was just an extra chance to keep him around. Plus COVID, it was probably just easier for them to do this. He really gave us no reason to hate him in the playoffs. And I would, if I'm Mark Bergevin, I see that as maybe this is a chance to, the players are playing for him. I wouldn't say again, you know, maybe he didn't lose the room, but like maybe they're on the right track. So you give him a little, you're on borrowed time. You got a little bit of extra time to prove yourself. It just sucks because we get the pieces and everything looks good in the beginning, and then we kind of fall off. I think it really stemmed from last year. I don't think he was supposed to make it past the end of the season.
Personally, I do think Bergevin's plan was to win with Julian. And he said that, you know, they clearly have a really good relationship, as well as Bergevin and Muller.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's been pretty clear since the off season that Bergevin has constructed this team to win now. And at the start of the season, it was evident that we can compete. People, all the critics saying, oh, Montreal's revealing their true colors, they're trash. No.
I don't think that's a fair act.
I don't think that's accurate at all. I think we're playing under par because we've shown that we can compete with the best. And when we're on our game, we are the best. Well, second best in the North. I still think the Leafs are the best in the North Division in terms of regular season play, at least. I think they have the best constructed roster. But to say that we're now showing our true colors, I think is just a load of shit. I think we're in a slump. And unfortunately, when a championship team goes into a slump, and I said it last episode, first thing you got to do is fucking fire the coach.
Yeah, they're the easiest to move, right? And it's a good point because you don't allow this to get worse. It's sad, but that's what needs to happen. You're not going to allow this team that looked so good in the beginning. You can't allow everything that was brought into this team to fall into that loser mentality. You had to sever the cord, and it just happened to be the time to do it.
Yeah,
something had to be done.
And I think, like, Bergevin announced that Ducharme is now taking over. I think this could be a breath of fresh air for the Habs. It looks like he is pretty into analytics and was talking about offensive possession and, you know, keeping hold of the puck. Talked a lot about offense because I think our defense, while it does need some work, if Price kind of comes out of this slump, I think we're going to be doing much better. But to kind of get back to my point, and that is offense and the breath of fresh air. Jesus Christ, I can't speak right now. I just think that if Ducharme can get what he got out of Drouin in the Quebec League, because he coached Drouin his whole junior career.
Nice.
Oh my God. Like, he's already been playing great, but could you imagine if Ducharme just revitalizes Drouin like that, and we just have this beast that we thought we had coming out of the queue?
Right.
And I also think he's going to benefit the young guys. For as much as I love Julian, I don't think his system really fits with the young guys. Suzuki, I think, was at the start of the season doing well in spite of the fact of Julian's system, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think KK has done okay. But I think under a new system, which hopefully with Ducharme, as we've seen in the past, emphasizes skill, I think those two are going to flourish especially. It'll be interesting to see what happens to Deneau, though.
I do like what you're saying about Ducharme and Drouin. I think that's awesome. It's going to bring a great connection between the two. But I think you're right. I'm not going to say you bring in a young coach. He's going to have a better chance to have more positivity with the younger guys. But this is a fresh step. You know, all of the brand new players on the team, they weren't over what Julian had brought to the table, but this is kind of new for everyone except for the people that's been around. You know, so it's not much of a change. They weren't used to the strategies before. So I don't see this as anything negative, really. If anything, this is the perfect chance to bring in someone new, because this is still a relatively new team learning this system. So you want to shake it up. You got to do it early. You know, there's no point in letting everyone learn a system and get used to it, you know, half of a season in, and then we have to make that change. This was the perfect time to do it. And Duchamp, Bergevin said that that is the guy he's been looking at. He's been, I wouldn't say grooming it, but that has been his guy. He said it in the interview on that Zoom conference that this is the one he's been looking at. So he's got all of his chips on this, and he hasn't really made a bad call. I mean,
no, I think most of what Bergevin has touched has turned into gold. And I like what you said there. We're also assuming Ducharme, and I think it's a fair assumption now, is going to kind of transition into the coaching role. We still need another assistant coach. Like, we're still two man down on the bench. There's going to be some hirings. An interesting suggestion I saw was Alexander Burrows, because he's been coaching the power play in Laval. Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's too, it's too early to bring him up. Like,
yeah. And I want to like, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt
you. This is back and forth. Like, this is how it should be. Like,
yeah, you're kind of getting to my point, because a big name I've seen thrown out there is Joel Bouchard, because people are loving, you know, he's a great coach and they're loving what they're seeing in the AHL. But I absolutely fucking love Joel Bouchard in the AHL. I don't want him to move. Because it's been proven, when you have a guy like Sylvain Lefebvre, mm-hmm. in as your AHL coach, you don't develop anybody. Our prospect pool has gotten so much better in the short time Bouchard has been down there. That's one of, I think, not talked about enough, an underrated move by Bergevin, but one of his absolute best in the last few years. And then I like to categorize the whole Claude Julien era kind of as the new era of Bergevin. You know, he tried one rebuild. It didn't compete. It didn't work. We're kind of in that new Bergevin era, the second era. And
right.
Yeah, he's just the talent coming out of our AHL team. We haven't really seen that before, right? And it's definitely been, it's put us in a much better position. Jake Evans is a prime example of that. So I kind of rule him out. But I'm curious, like, if it's not Ducharme, because he was named interim, he wasn't named head coach, and that, I think that's an important distinction to make. If also, Bergevin,
I think
was,
it's, you don't make that decision. Like, it's too early for that decision. You haven't even, you got to give the benefit of the doubt. You have to interview people. There's no point in firing someone and rushing to hire somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And I know you're a big Gerard Gallant guy.
God, please let this be the year that we transition from the French-speaking coach. It's a dying breed, and this would be the perfect time. Make Duchamp, see if the Duchamp would like an assistant coaching job. I don't give a fuck. That's where he's been, you know, like just.
Well, he's been an associate coach, actually. Not even the
associate. Sorry, but
whatever. Yeah, Kirk Muller was the second. Duchamp was the third.
And all I'm saying is you want to talk about a guy that can take a team of average players and make them believe in a system, like, and this dude's just chilling at home, like Gerard Gallant.
Yeah, I am. Obviously, I'm a little closer to home on that aspect, because I understand the whole, like, I understand why Quebecers feel it's important to have a coach that can speak to them and speak to their media in their native language, because it is important to kind of understand, right? And part of what has made Quebec such a unique culture and kind of a haven in Canada for French culture, I think even in the world, they're one of the most preserved, pristine, like they're what's the classification? They're own society.
Stuck in their old ways. Like,
no, they're recognized as a distinct society in Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's because they have laws in place to kind of retain their culture, retain their language. But look at the most successful teams in the world. They take, in any sport, they take who's available, who is the best candidate. And soccer is a prime example. The Premier League is almost entirely filled with coaches who are Spanish, German, or Italian. They can barely speak English, but damn, can they coach a soccer team. So they take them, right? And I just think Montreal is holding themselves back with this whole French coaching rule. Would you rather, like, not, like, you can get a translator, coaches can try, can learn French. If they make the attempt to learn French, I think it's all the power to them, right? They're trying. But if English is their main language, I think it should be okay. Because would you rather have to listen, get to listen, sorry, to a French-speaking coach and not win a cup, or listen to Gerard Gallant either stammer in awkward French or speak through a translator to then go on and win a cup? I want the cup. If I have to listen to entirely French interviews with my coaching staff, with my GM, I will take that if it means we can win a cup. So I just think, and before, I just want to get that out of the way before you make your case for Gerard Gallant, because he is your boy.
Hear me the fuck out, folks. U.S. born, southern, nowhere near French Canada. Gerard Gallant, right? Born in Summerside. It's Prince Edward Island. I just looked at it. It's fucking right by Nova Scotia. Quebec City's relatively close looking at this fucking map. Okay, so you're telling me that this guy didn't learn French growing up? He might not be, like, fluent. He knows a bit, right? You guys all know a bit of French, all right? 2012, he joins Michel Therrien as the assistant coach, one of our best in this, you know, era, you know, as we're growing up. This is some of the best time that the Canadians had. You know, this is when we were actually making moves. And guess what? He played with Marc Bergevin in Tampa Bay. You're telling me that this guy isn't, like, top three, top five people being looked at. Like, he's already done work in Montreal. He's played with Marc Bergevin. He was here for some of the best hockey that the Habs have seen in the last two decades. You know, if there's a time to bring in, you know, someone outside of Quebec that's a coach, Gerard Gallant, why not? I don't know. I feel like Charlie from It's Always Sunny, just trying to pinpoint shit on the wall, Pepe Sylvia. But, like, this is kind of a no-brainer. Like, if this is the year that we break the cycle, and granted, I love the tradition, but you know what? I want to see this team win. I think we all want to see this team be successful more than just keeping this tradition anymore. And I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but if you make the step outside of someone who isn't, I think Gerard Gallant's the perfect example. He's already worked with us. He knows Marc Bergevin, and he was here during some of the best hockey we've seen in a long time. So you can burn me at the stake, but I think if we got to pick someone outside of what, you know, the same four or five guys again, I think Gerard Gallant is the perfect candidate. I mean, look what he did with Vegas. It's all I'm fucking saying. You know, granted, not everything's up to Gallant. The players have to believe in him. But if he can take a team of guys who everyone gave up on, that's why they went to that fucking team, and send them to a fucking cup, you know, a cup against the Capitals in 2018. I mean, what can he do with a bunch of guys who are playing excellent that just need the extra step?
I will say, in regards to, just to play devil's advocate, because I am a big fan of Gallant, everyone kind of talks about the Vegas Golden Knights like they were some fucking Mighty Ducks group of outcasts. If you look at the rules of that draft, essentially what Vegas was drafting and what their entire team was made up of was second liners or very high quality third liners all on a team. So every one of their lines was made up of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
They were gifted a franchise goaltender who was drafted first overall. And they got guys like Mark fucking Stone, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson. Like, what Gallant did was incredible. But the narrative of them being outcasts, I think, is a little a little deep, maybe.
Okay,
I don't know.
Let me hip you to this. We always say that this team does not have that superstar. We're no real different than Vegas.
That's what I was getting to.
Like,
that's exactly what that's where I was going with it. I don't know. Top Titty Toffoli is just fucking scorching teams. He might be a superstar.
What? This Look is a team that needs the rejuvenation. I think we need to rejuvenate Gerard Gallant. Even if he take an assistance spot, like if he's available for anything, you got to hear him out. He's got to be in the top three. I'm sorry. That could be just a US fucking player fan, but he's got to be up there. He's got to be your number one non-Francophone fucking coach.
I got two things for that. One, if I'm Gerard Gallant, I am not taking any job other than a head coaching job, because who the fuck are the Seattle Kraken going to call that is better suited for the job than me? Second, we've talked about, obviously, we're two Anglophone people. And I am curious, like, if we have any Francophone listeners, which I know we have, like, a few.
Motherfucker, come on.
Like, yeah, like, tell us.
Shoot us a fucking DM.
Like, I want to know your perspective on this, because my opinion is jaded, because this is how I have, you know, I haven't been raised in Quebec. But I'm interested to know, why is it, if you disagree with us and you think it's still important to have a French speaking coach or a Francophone coach, let us know. Like, I'm curious, like, just explain it to us. We're not trying to be disrespectful. I think it's definitely not an opinion that is just exclusively shared between ourselves. I'm pretty sure it's widespread among Habs fans. We are a global fan base at this point. It's not just Quebec based. So yeah, like, let us know. I'm really curious. I kind of want to move on a bit from the coaching debate, unless you have any more to add, Corey, and kind of start talking about that Sens game in which we both only caught the last period of, but there's some shit to talk about there too.
I got nothing else. They got Patrick Roy slotted as the number three spot as far as people look at. And I think Patrick Roy would spitefully destroy this team, and that's my hot take. That's it.
The revenge, the longest play.
Like, you quit on. I'm not us, you know. You quit on fucking on the Avalanche, and now they're a fucking powerhouse. I ain't interested in a quitter. He's got too much pride.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't think Patrick was a quitter. I actually don't think Patrick Roy did bad in Colorado. I think that man deserves another coaching gig, but not in Montreal, that's for sure. Yeah. But moving on to the
good on that.
Moving on to the Sens, the call.
Yeah, first off, there's nothing else to talk about that game other than Shea Weber finally came out and did something positive so people can shut the fuck up about
I didn't even how see bad he's been the playing. Goals.
Yeah, two like, goals.
One timers or
I believe one was a deflection and one was just like Murray was screened and just went in. He's got the fastest fucking shot. So, and they were all vicious. But beyond that, there's nothing else to really talk about in that game other than the power play was fucking trash.
I don't know. I don't know about that one. I think it was
Jake Evans, 9 minutes. Jake Evans has been unreal. Once again, Lehkonen's out. I don't think that's the best. Maybe our PP hasn't been that fucking – I mean, our PK hasn't been that great lately, but Lehkonen's a monster on the PK. Like, he's kind of saving us, and maybe losing him twice, you know, maybe we could have got two of the four, you know. I mean, you know,
well,
two of those goals could have been
maybe kind of – I think what you're saying is important, but you haven't even touched on that fucking goalie interference call.
Oh, no, because I just wanted to knock out the bullshit so we can get straight to
– I think that is the bullshit.
The most asinine part of this, because it's the only thing to talk about in this game. Turkey, fuck off.
Do I need to continue with my – like, you could probably – my catchphrase at this point? The NHL officials this year have
trash.
So
trash,
fucking bad. And you know what? It's not even the officials. It's Toronto. The review team in Toronto. What I think pissed me off most about this call, and it wasn't just that they got it wrong, it was that Ottawa could not have challenged it. It was the league that challenged it. It was called a good goal on the ice. Why are you interfering? For starters,
it's the second good goal that was given by the fucking people on the ice that was turned over from fucking Toronto. Continue.
How much do you pay your officials a year? And you're not going to trust them to make the right call on the ice? For starters. And then when you review it, you mess up that blatantly. Like, are you kidding me? There are so many things about that play. Or sorry, about that call that they fucked up. But by God, what is this going to start? So every time a goalie gets nudged in his crease, does he just going to have to like stand and look at the rafters for about 2 minutes and just let the puck go in and they're going to take it back? Murray had so much time to get back into position. He did, but he could have gotten back into position sooner. He stood there looking at the ref. Like, it just baffles me. If Gallagher had enough time to get up, and he made this point, he was pissed. You don't often see players speak out like that, especially Gallagher. And consider all the cheap shots and all the shit he takes. He never complains about the refs or calls or anything. He complained. He was pissed because he made a good point. If he had enough time to get up and deflect the shot, did Murray not have enough time to get up and make the save? Regardless of the fact that he barely pushed him, regardless of the fact that Gallagher was shoved into him. And then 3 hours later, the fucking Oilers, or was it? No. Calgary Flames score a goal. Matt Tkachuk does the exact same thing, like basically pushes the goalie in. And tonight, as we're recording this, the Leafs have one of the most blatant goalie interference calls that I've ever seen, not called on them, and they score to send it to overtime. It's like, can we get some fucking consistency here? Or are we just playing beer league hockey at this point?
Look, I'm watching the Toronto one. I think that's a fair goal. But
it's the exact, it's worse than what we did.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I can see your point. But
if ours is that obvious, I'm sorry to cut you off, but they're acting like ours was so obviously goalie interference. If ours is that obvious, the Toronto one should be no fucking question. Call on the ice, goalie interference. But there's no consistency in this league. It's the fuck Montreal, fuck everyone else. We're gonna suck off the Leafs league.
All right. So here's my thing on the Gallagher, right? Gallagher comes back in from behind the net. He cuts to the inside. He's got nowhere to go, but he's in the blue, right? He's in the crease. Therefore, they're already ready to throw a red flag. But the guy who's on Gallagher, he can only do one thing, right? It's to push him into Matt Murray, which he doesn't do. He doesn't successfully, you know, take out his own teammate. But there's no defensive thing you can do against Brendan Gallagher in that situation that does not make Matt Murray, you know, fall or you know, gain goaltender interference. Brendan Gallagher did everything he possibly could to not interrupt him. Interruption, right? He falls. Gallagher has time to get up. Matt Murray, like you said, looking around, looking for officials, looking for the call. It doesn't happen, right? He gets up. He repositions himself. It's not anyone's fault that he decided to set himself back up, not in the middle of the fucking net, but he does. He legit sets himself up. He's he's back in motion, ready to continue his play. And Brendan Gallagher basically puts it in, and he's not even fully set up yet. He's getting hit again. So I don't understand how do – all right, so if a goalie falls, does everyone have to leave the blue, have to leave the crease, allow him to stand up, get back into position, and then everyone else can swarm the crease again? Because there's no definitive – this is the most ass-backwards rule in the game, because you can't tell me what goaltender interference is. Whoever's the biggest people in the fucking game couldn't give me, you know, an honest answer. No one knows. It's up to them at that moment to figure out what they want to do. If the fucking call on the ice is a goal, Matt Murray had time to set himself up again. The goal goes in. Fuck you. It's a good goal. But because it's in 2 minutes left in the game, all fucking goals go straight to, straight to Toronto.
I didn't know about that rule. I think that's fucking stupid. You pay these officials how much? And my biggest beef is, if that's not a goal, whatever. If it's clearly defined in the rules, I think it should be a goal. Because in my brain, I cannot see the logic. There is no logic. Sorry. It's just stupid. You can figure out that Murray has ample time to make that save. It's not Gallagher's fault. My major beef though is, like, I feel like I'm repeating myself all the time, but it's because this continually happens. And every fan thinks the refs are against us, but I genuinely think there's some sort of league conspiracy against us. If that call is consistent and they make it every single time, okay, I know what I have to do. I understand that, okay, that will never be a goal. So as a player and as a viewer, you know what to expect from the refs. And as an athlete, like, I've played a lot of sports in my time on this planet, baseball and soccer especially, the worst refs weren't the ones who made bad calls. Because if they made bad calls consistently, you knew what to expect. Like, I used to play ball, and there was this one umpire. His strike zone was, like, in the dirt. But it was always in the dirt. So you knew right away, right? Okay, I'm going to have to swing if it's low, leave it if it's high. And you can work off that. But we had another umpire who – one day it's over your head, it's a strike. The next day it's like right at your chin and it's a ball. So that was more frustrating. And I think that's kind of what we're getting here. If I can get some consistency, whether or not I agree with the rule or not, I think the players would probably say the same thing. They'll live with it. They'll adapt. But this inconsistency, he's just ruining games for me. And it's not just Habs games. Like, I'm watching a lot of hockey because this Canadian division is fun. And every time, like every day, it seems there's some sort of ref bullshit. And I just don't understand how the most elite hockey league on the planet hasn't figured out their own rules yet. It's been how many years? Like 100 and how many years of the NHL, and you can't make a goalie interference call yet. It baffles me how it's just, like, unprepared for these situations the officials are.
Matt Murray doesn't even fall. Doesn't even fall. If you want to blow, if you want to say it's a bad goal, then you can blame it on Brendan Gallagher holding the jersey of Zaitsev. Or whoever it is on him, because all he does is get knocked down, which spins out Matt Murray. Matt Murray never falls. He's basically on his knees. And as soon as he stands up, how is that not back in position? Because Brendan Gallagher gets laid on, pushes the guy off of him, stands up the same time that Matt Murray stands up, how is that not in position? No one's in the crease.
No, sorry. I was just going to do you remember that Kreider goal?
Yeah.
Like he literally he dragged Price out of the net with his stick. And that's what I mean. If that's legal, okay. But if it's not, let me know. And it's like, I don't think, in a way I feel for the officials because I think they're just as clueless as we are. I really do. I don't think they know what goalie interference is.
I don't even know how do you even fix this? I don't think you can.
Well, do you see what I'm saying?
Like, you either take it, you either get rid of the entire fucking rule, or we continue to have this lawless, whatever the refs on the ice see is going to be it. Then whatever Toronto wants to call it is going to be it. That because there's at that point, you're not worried about what the officials think. The last 2 minutes of the game, they can call whatever the fuck they want. It's going to get reviewed. So it doesn't matter for them. They can go fucking, they could get off the ice. They could leave early because everything from that point is going to be up to Toronto. And I'm not saying Toronto is going to fuck us. I'm just saying there's no point in having them to call a very fucking important goal if they're not going to keep it. Like if the officials on the ice who are getting paid to do this job, who are supposed to know the rule to the best of their knowledge, just like everyone else, if they're calling it a good goal, how the fuck is it not a good goal?
Yeah, I don't know. It's ridiculous, and we could talk about it all day. But I want to talk about, since we're bitching about the league, how badly do you want to get rid of the shootout? That was one of the best overtimes I've watched in a long time.
They said it on the fucking...
They wish they had another 5 minutes, yeah, like, right?
Three more minutes, and this game would have been wrapped up.
Oh.
I don't mind the shootout.
I hate it.
But I tell you what, 5 minutes isn't enough for 3-on-3.
Could you imagine?
I'm not saying 10, you know, but like they need give them 8 minutes. I don't know.
Okay, but hear me out. Imagine if you go to work, right? And you grind like 3 hours for 3 hours and you still got to get your work done. So you put some extra time in and then you're still not quite done. But if you finish this, you're going to get a big reward.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're kind of competing against your coworker. You're kind of like, you know, whatever. Right. And then your boss says, all right, I'm going to give your whole like team, right. Whatever, like everyone who's working. Okay. This one person is going to decide whether you guys finish or not, like, or get your reward. That's what the shootout is. You're taking an entire team performance. That was a shit analogy. I apologize, but like, and then saying, okay, yeah, one person gets to decide or two people get to decide the outcome of this. It's fucking Bush League. It's a skill competition. Like, I get it in soccer, which I hate it too, but in soccer and big competitions, like, they're starting to get rid of the penalty shootout. But soccer has draws, so it's like kind of eliminates that. We shouldn't have points decided on a shootout. It's not hockey. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It was just Price stopped Stützle how many times that night on, like, you know what I mean? Like, just stoned him. And then Stützle gets an open opportunity to score on him. Like, that's not hockey. That's not how it works. I don't know. It just frustrates me. I don't think a hockey game should be decided by a skills competition.
I think so first off, and before we wrap it up, the fun and the thrill of the shootout is long gone. You know, the TJ Oshie excitement, you know, in the World Cup, that's gone. You know, no one wants to see this anymore. But when you bring in something that's way more exciting than the shootout and you give us 3-on-3 play, no one's going to want to see this shit anymore because everyone wants to watch the overtime.
That's a great point.
And you're taking it away from us. So, yeah, granted, I like the shootout because I'm, you know, like, because there's going to be moments like TJ Oshie, right? When it's do or die. But this ain't, it ain't fun no more because you gave us something that we're addicted to. You gave us 3-on-3 fucking power play hockey. It's some of the fucking wildest shit ever. The best goals. No one's going to want to see that end in 5 minutes. Nobody. Like, we don't use it in the playoffs, so it's a dying breed as it is.
Yeah. You know, fair enough.
Send it to 8 minutes. If it fucking doesn't end, 5-minute break, send the next fucking unit out.
Welcome to
fucking double overtime.
I love your point about you gave us 3-on-3, and then now you're denying us finishing it with the shootout because I think the shootout, what TJ Oshie did in the Olympics, that is one of the greatest, like, that's something I'm going to tell my grandkids. Yeah, I'm going to tell my grandkids about that, but it doesn't get better than that.
No, especially not. 3-on-3
overtime is always
not like this.
Yeah, so you're kind of denying us of what we now know how exciting overtime can be. And we're like, oh, shit, we don't get that anymore. So I would love the idea of,
you know, where the shootouts only need to be an Olympic and World Cup play. That's it.
Well, if you're not going to decide playoffs on it, why aren't you going to decide a regular season game on it?
It's a dying breed. Okay. It's like going to a show and your favorite band plays before the final act, and the final act is a bunch of washed up fucking guys that are just in it for the money again, you know, just trying to make, oh man, we haven't put out a record in 10 fucking years, and this is kind of our farewell tour. We're not that fucking great. We're going to play new material. No one wants to fucking hear that. But get the fuck off the stage. Why is the best band here playing before you? Why is this old dusty fuck going to come on after? Like, TJ Oshie fucking gave us what shootout hockey it was supposed to be. And since then, it's been a decline. It's been, can't wait to see that happen in the NHL. Ain't going to fucking happen. Ain't going to be important enough to happen like that.
Well, the rules don't even allow it to happen.
No, I don't mean like having him come out that many times. It's just not a moment in shootout history since TJ Oshie for the NHL, just NHL play, that has lived up to that. No one gives a fuck. Oh my God, he deked him out of his fucking crease.
Like, the goals themselves as highlights, I fucking love. But winning in a shootout and losing in a shootout, it's just not the same. Like I get, we're bitter because we just lost in the shootout. But when I win in the shootout, like, I'll be hype when, like, if Price makes a save, I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go. But then we win and I'm like, oh. Because it can be so anticlimactic. Like, you can win off of, like, you score one goal and then no one scores for 5 rounds. And you're like, oh, we won.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's boring.
Yeah. It's super boring. How about this? If a shootout goal doesn't count towards individual statistics, why the fuck does it – why is it still here? Why is it still – why is it even – in the NHL.
That's a good point.
How close
it would help my fantasy a lot if it.
Okay, you're right. But how close would someone like Alex Ovechkin be to Wayne Gretzky if all of his fucking shootout goals counted?
Yeah, that'd be bullshit cuz Gretzky doesn't like
okay,
cuz he never had shootouts, right?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying like if it doesn't count as an individual, like if it's off the board statistically, and it's its own fucking category, why the fuck should it matter?
Why is it in the game if it's not counted as the game stats?
I think Carey Price has been rough, right? They were like, oh, he's fucking 33-30 on shootouts, whatever.
Yeah, but if that's the point. I think that's the point. They're 50-50.
Yeah, all right. But look, if he's going to lose to a goal that's not even going to be counted as that person's, like, it's not going to be towards their 20-goal season. You got to feel like a complete piece of shit for losing a game to a goal that ain't even glorified as a goal.
Yeah, fair enough.
Get it the fuck out of here.
That's a good point. And I think we could rant about this for a while. We've actually been going for some decent amount of time.
Solid 45.
Which is pretty long for one of our Wednesdays. So, yeah. Before we leave this, I just want to give a shout out to Canadians Aggregator on Twitter. I also have a website. Me and Corey absolutely love these guys, ladies, whatever. This group, they shout us out on our episodes almost every week, and we fucking appreciate it, let me tell you. But literally the hub for Habs content, like, I know we call ourselves that. They fucking, any piece of Habs content on the internet, they will post it. They will retweet it. They will have it on their website. They have a podcast player in which they play this podcast to people. So if you have not checked out Canadians Aggregator, we really fucking recommend it. This is not a paid ad. We haven't contacted them about this. Like, we just really appreciate the service as Habs fans. And we just wanted to give a shout because fucking hell, like, not only have they done bits for us, but just have the Habs community as a whole. What a great idea. And they've performed it perfectly. So we just want to give a shout. Thanks, guys, ladies. And, you know, keep doing your shit because it's like an amazing idea.
Yeah, I love it. This is the equivalent of like a family restaurant, you know, like locally owned shit. Sometimes I might be in a bind. I might have had something to do that day. I'm not caught up on what was the news that was going on. I can easily go there and get a brief summary of what I missed. You know, it's great on days like today when, you know, like you forget you have a podcast. But they're really great people. Guilty. And they look for the little guy. And, you know, we're the little guy right now. And they take the time to post and get us out there. And we really appreciate them doing that. And please keep it up. You guys are amazing folks. Oh, one more shout out. Alex Dortman, hopefully you're listening, bro. Reached out to Habs Nightly. I voiced my frustrations on finding a Cole Caulfield Wisconsin jersey. Dude came in pretty quick, 9:12 in the morning, dropped the link, and I'll be purchasing one of them soon enough. So thank you so much for for finding that for us.
Yeah, and hopefully he is listening to the end of this podcast to get there. And if you have listened to the end of this podcast, we really fucking appreciate it. We're going to have some pretty interesting content on Sunday, I think, or Monday. We record Sunday. So I'm pretty excited for this week of the Habs. I think we're going to be flying. Teams usually are after a coaching change. So we're going to have a lot to talk about. Possibly some new lineups. You never know. So, you know, we're excited. Hopefully you guys are too.
And this will definitely be interesting.
No, go ahead, bro.
No, it'll be so interesting. Thank you guys so much for listening. But also, you guys are listening to a game day. We're about to see – this is our first game against Winnipeg. So, you know, this is going to be a fun game. New room, new feel, you know. This is a new Habs team. And we're right there alongside you, just in excitement, looking for another W. But, folks, this has been Habs Nightly. Thank you all so much for listening. Please follow us at Habs Nightly and Bayou Benders, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.